The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj on June 6, 1981 at the temple in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8, Text 17.
Canto 7, Chapter 8, Text 17.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. To prove that the statement of his servant, Prahlad Maharaja, was substantial. In other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Translation with repetition. To prove that the statement of his servant, Prahlad Maharaja, was substantial. In other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, "Where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar?" Prahlad Maharaj fearlessly replied, "Yes, my Lord is present everywhere." Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could understand whether the great could not understand whether the great giant was lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, the Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Prahlad Maharaj's demoniac father had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad. But Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed, since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from that pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotees, saying in effect, "Don't worry, I am present here." By manifesting his form as Narasimha Deva, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. Thus in the purport by Srila Prabhupada of text 18, chapter 8, canto 7 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hiranyakashipu was always inimical to the Lord, and always inimical to his son, Prahlad. He wanted that Prahlad should be the good son of the king of the demons. Prahlad should simply be a materialist, an exploiter, and should denounce worship of Krishna, acceptance of the presence of the Supreme Lord. And he tried his best to deprogram his son by sending him to the student, to the classroom of the sons of Sukra Acharya. But instead of being taught or changed by these sons of Sukra Acharya, as soon as the teachers left, Prahlad used the opportunity to preach. He told all the students to chant Hare Krishna. Kumaram Achari Praget, that from the very childhood one should practice Krishna consciousness. How that half our life is wasted by sleeping, and the first 10 years is wasted in simply ignorance, practically speaking. The next 10 to 20 years is wasted in playing around and studies. 10 years, up to 10 to 20. And then, from 20 to 40, 50, one is fully engrossed into the family affairs. Even 60. And the last 20 years of one's life, also the body becomes unpleasant, weak. So then it is very difficult to fix the mind. So in this way, Prahlad Maharaj was explaining to his friends, who would object that we are only children, why should we get into all this spiritual activities? Let us play around and worry about that later. That later will not do. Now you must begin. Because if you go on saying later, there's never an appropriate time in this life. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to lecture that there's no shortage in this material world. There's no shortage. Everything is here for material enjoyment. One doesn't also have to try hard for that material enjoyment. That will automatically come due to the previous activities, reaction, or the karma fault. But if one wants to become Krishna conscious, which is the one thing which is missing in this world, one has to specifically try for it. One has to try to be Krishna conscious. Automatically, by the modes of nature, by the senses, one is taken. You've seen that picture in the Bhagavad Gita, the five horses pulling with a mind holding the steers, or is it the intelligence? And the soul is being dragged along. Just like that, we don't have to try for our material happiness. That is coming of its own accord. But to be Krishna conscious, then we have to make a conscious effort. In other words, we have a material mind, and so it's already addicted to material desire, material thought, material lamentation. Doesn't need to be programmed for that. But our natural Krishna conscious desire, that has been covered by this conditioned mind. So initially we have to desire to return to our original consciousness. And by desiring to return to our original consciousness, by desiring to be Krishna conscious, and then acting in accordance with those desires, and automatically we become Krishna conscious. But it's not automatic. As soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, then we start making our advancement. So Prahlad Maharaj, he never turned his face away from Krishna. His father put him to the greatest test, held him over the canyon, thousands of feet sheer drop, sharp rocks below. Prahlad, stop chanting Hare Krishna or I'll throw you in this pit. Give up this nonsense path. What do you have to say for yourself? Now before I cast you down. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That was Prahlad's reply. Damn you! Threw him down. Disgrace to the demon race. And of course, falling down, Prahlad is chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Krishna catches Prahlad, sets him down. Daiva Prakriti. Under the protection of the divine potency, Subhadra Devi, the devotee is under her protection. Of course, sometimes the demons, they are very clever, like Hiranyakashipu. He tried all the direct methods, like throwing in boiling oil, having the demons try to cut him up, throwing him in the pit of snakes, putting him under the hoofs of elephants. So then he tried his diplomatic way. He prepared some nice sweet with poison. And he came and said, Prahlad, you've been working very hard doing the Sankirtan. I'd like to just give you some token of my appreciation. Take these sweet balls. Simply wonderful. And he gave the sweets, and after all, you are my son. So of course, Prahlad couldn't put his faith in Hiranyakashipu. And in any case, he prayed to Krishna that I cannot eat anything that's not offered to you. Since this is not your prasadam, how can I take? Unless you take, I cannot take the bhoga, unoffered food. And he was chanting, then Krishna appeared. And Krishna personally took a bite out of the sweet ball. And then he personally put the sweet ball in Prahlad's mouth. And Prahlad, he, of course, once it touched Krishna's lips, it became nectar. No longer was poison. So, of course, again, Hiranyakashipu's plan was thwarted. So finally, Hiranyakashipu, he decided that he's going to take in his own hands the sword. And he's going to personally kill his five-year-old son. Why he wants to kill Prahlad? What was his crime? What was his fault? That simply he was a devotee. That was his fault. And why? Not an ordinary devotee. He was preaching. It was enough, at least if he was a devotee without preaching, it would not have aggravated Hiranyakashipu so much. You see, there are so many devotees. It's like Srila Prabhupada said that when there is, opposition to the preaching, this is the sign that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is being represented. Of course, there may be sometimes some misbehavior, that's another thing. But actual preaching, the demons, they'll be upset. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching and his Sankirtan movement went out, then of course, even the Hindu caste Brahmanas, they went and approached the Chankazi and said, you must stop this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not representing the Hindu religion properly. He's misrepresenting. He's accepting everyone, no matter what their caste, what their creed, everyone. He's even Mohammedans he's accepting into his movement. So he must be stopped. This is against the Vedas. This was their proposal. Of course, they were misrepresenting the Vedas. For their own caste, consciousness and caste privileges. So the Chankasi, he recorded their complaints. And then, of course, the Mahamudans, they also came and they complained that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is chanting Hare Krishna in all the streets and all the marketplaces and all the bathing ghats. He must be stopped. So the Chankasi, he said, I can understand that you are complaining about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanting, since you are all Mohammedans. But my question is why you are chanting Hare Krishna. Why you are chanting? And they said, this is an amazing thing that when we hear these devotees chant, we cannot ourselves stop chanting. Just like one of our distributors that was distributing in New York told us how in this one particular street there was one very heavy guard outside one store. And he used to break up the sales, used to threaten. But gradually, of course, every so the devotee would stay a little bit out from the store. But if he got close, and immediately that person would start to growl. And every day he saw him, he said, Hare Krishna. Every day he just said, Hare Krishna. And that person, he'd always, you know, tell the people, don't buy anything, these are the Hare Krishnas, Hare Krishnas. And after about a couple months of this, so one day, the distributor, he took out, he had this a bliss bar or something like that, some yogi bar or something. And because he gave one to a person, and the person ate it, and so he saw that the guard was looking. So then he also gave him one. And he took it. He said, don't worry, it's good, you know, when I'm distributing. And the person went. And ate it. Eyes lit up. He came out. Said, good. So he'd take a few more. And so, after that, some chanting, a little prasadam. Then, gave him a book also. Then he started to help distributing. Became a great friend. Every day gave him a bliss bar, kept him in bliss. And in this way, even the person in the beginning, the big, very heavy character, very inimical, he completely changed just by association with devotees, just by the chanting of Hare Krishna. And this Hiranyakashipu knew, he told Prahlad that you don't associate with any devotees because association is so powerful, you may become good. You may become a devotee yourself. And you don't associate this association just like a mirror on the consciousness. And this was his advice. Of course, Prahlad was already before birth because he was instructed when in the womb of his mother. When his mother was in the ashram of Narada Muni, he received the instruction from Narada Muni. So he was already a devotee. That's why his father couldn't understand where he got all this information. Although Prahlad didn't keep it a secret. So this association is so powerful. So these Mohammedans, when they gave their complaint to the Chankasi, and he asked them, why you were chanting? You're Mohammedans, you're not supposed to chant. Why you were chanting? He said, we do now every day we're associating with these devotees, we hear them chanting, and it's always going in our brain. We're just thinking Hare Krishna, seeing Hare Krishna. And always, even in our sleep we dream Hare Krishna. We don't know what is this magic. We think maybe we are under some spell. So of course, the Chankasi, he broke the Madrangas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first sent his soldiers, and all the devotees went back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that should we stop the Sankirtan? Should we stop it now? They've broken our mudrangas. No, don't stop the Sankirtan. Go on with the Sankirtan movement. Nothing can stop the Sankirtan movement. So then, of course, they went back out and began the Sankirtan again. Then the Chankazi, hearing the sound of the mudrangas, he personally came and broke the mudrangas. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard that the mudrangas had been broken, he took out, and at that time the 14 different Sankirtan groups, they gathered the people from all the parts of Navadvip. And they all assembled. Huge, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. This was Lord Chaitanya. Simply by his word, hundreds of thousands of people would jump. And they all appeared enraged outside the Chankazi's house with torches in their hand. Some of them were a little violent. Kill the Kazi! Burn him! He can't stop the Sankirtan movement. Some were shouting out. Some were breaking up the garden. The Chankazi was hiding under his bed. When he saw the huge crowds of people, he knew there was no escape. So he came down. And of course, then he approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That why? Since your grandfather called me uncle, you're coming to your uncle's house, why are you acting in this very violent way? Is this a way to treat your uncle? Lord Chaitanya said, well, since I am your nephew, is this the way you receive your nephew? Keep him standing out on the road. No, come in. Brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course they discussed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why you are killing your mother? And he said, what do you mean killing my mother? You're killing the cow. How the cow is my mother? You're drinking the milk. Who is giving you the milk? From her breast, isn't she your mother? How you can kill her and your father too? The bull who is the father of the mother, who is bringing home the grains. So then, in discussion, it actually came out that in the Quran, in the Muhammadan scriptures, it forbids one from taking meat, especially cow meat, if one wants to be spiritually advanced. For those who are materialistic, then there's another way. But if you want to actually go back to God, it's forbidden in the Quran. So of course, that just shows where everybody wants to go nowadays. That's following the Quran. You're not taking the higher path that was recommended. So at that time, the Chankazi, he revealed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I saw a terrible vision in my sleep. After I broke this mudranga, after I ordered to have the Sankirtan movement stop, a terrific form, half man, half lion, appeared. And he said, if you ever dare stop the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again, then I will finish you off. And he ripped my chest with his claws. And he opened up his shirt and saw there was still the bloody mark on his chest. And when I woke up, there, look at, this mark was still there. And he was shaking in fear. See, Nrisimhadev had appeared to the Chankazi. So Lord Chaitanya just touched him. And then he was filled with transcendental ecstasy, love for Krishna. Entered into his heart. By the presence and the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Chankazi was changed. And he ordered that from now on, the Sankirtan movement shall enjoy my full protection in Navadvip. It shall never be hampered. So, there may be some test and there's some opposition, but by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, the association of the devotees is so strong it overcomes this. The Chankazi, he was called the uncle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because just as in Krishna Leela, Lord Chaitanya as Krishna killed his uncle, Kamsa. So the Kamsa of Chaitanya Leela is the Chankazi. But Lord Chaitanya is showing his mercy, instead of killing him outright, killed his demoniac nature. Killed his demoniac nature by making him into a devotee. Even today, the descendants of the Chankazi, they're still favorable to the Sankirtan movement. So, Narasingha Dev, he protects his devotees. Now, Prahlad was protected by Lord Narasingha Dev. The devotees prayed to Narasingha Dev for the health of their spiritual master. Narasingha Dev, his mood is to protect the devotee. He was so angry. Why? He was so angry. He was shaking in anger. Because why was this devotee being persecuted? Simply because he was a devotee. Not because he had broken any laws, and not because he had done any... Because so many people are doing so many things. But because he's a devotee. Therefore, he was singled out to be tormented, to be tortured, to be harassed. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is such that even those who are the tormentors, the devotee has no enemy. Of course, to protect another devotee is willing to do everything in his power. But actually, the devotee, he has no enemy. And the proof is that if even a so-called enemy, if the slightest chance is there to make him a devotee, or to make him advance in devotional service, or to give him some mercy that he will accept and not offend, the devotee always jumped at the chance. That means that enemy means someone who you want to see harmed. See, the devotee doesn't have any enemy. He wants to see everyone transferred to the spiritual sky. But of course, when such compassionate devotees are harassed in Narasingha Dev, he becomes angry. And here a devotee simply giving out mercy, simply trying to distribute mercy, he's being persecuted by this rascal demon. The devotee takes it that I deserve to be punished in so many ways for all my sinful activities. And this is simply Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna's mercy upon me. Sometimes some difficulty is there to further temper the devotee and to open up new fields of preaching. But the devotee has to remember that he is the representative of Krishna. Just as Krishna took a personal offense that his devotee was being punished. Similarly, when the four Kumaras entered into the heavenly planet, into the Vaikuntha Lokas, and the two gatekeepers stopped them, Lord Narayan, he personally appeared before the four Kumaras, and he said that, I take personal responsibility because these are my servitors. Because they are my servitors, I ask your forgiveness for their activities. In other words, that it's two-sided. Just as much as the devotee is protected by the Lord because he's representing the Lord, similarly, the devotee has the responsibility to act as the Lord, as the spiritual master, would want him to act. That which will leave a good impression upon those people to whom they are preaching. Because if a person becomes offensive to a devotee, and that is detrimental to his spiritual life. We can see that by being offensive to Prahlad, the duration of Hiranyakashipu's life his kingdom, his opulence, everything was lost simply by being offensive to a devotee. So a devotee doesn't want anyone's misfortune, doesn't try to act in a way which will encourage someone to be offensive. Of course, simply by chanting in Sankirtan or Harinam or by preaching, if some demon is offended, for that we cannot stop preaching. But unnecessarily, a devotee will not act in such a way as to create a person to be inimical, because that will simply take that person further away from Krishna consciousness. And Krishna, he feels responsible, because the devotee is his representative. They never say that Bhakta Bill did something wrong. They always say that Krishna's. So Krishna means Krishna's, Krishna's devotees. So Krishna, he's the one that gets the ultimate result. So he's responsible to protect, and he's also responsible for the devotee's actions. So the devotee has to be very careful. And I'm representing the whole Sampradaya, and Krishna, I must act responsibly in preaching. And then one will get the mercy. Irresponsible action that embarrasses Krishna and the spiritual master. And ultimately, of course, then, how can that preacher be successful? So Prahlad Maharaj, of course, he was always very gentle, well-behaved, but he didn't stop preaching. Every opportunity he got, he used it to preach. And that was what they didn't like. So that, the preaching, the Goshti Anandi, the preaching devotee, can never stop. There's two types of devotees. The Bhajananandi, who wants his own liberation, wants to do his own bhajan. And there's the Goshti Anandi, who wants to see the devotees' number increase. The Goshti Anandi, his pleasure, his satisfaction, is to see the Lord's purpose fulfilled. That is to have more and more devotees. The Lord wants that the fallen soul should return. The Goshti Anandi, he's fulfilling that desire. Just like we've sang, Si Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sang Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam. And I offer my respectful obeisances to Rupa Goswami. Because why? Manobhishtam. What is the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He knows that, and he has established that. Stapitam Jena Bhutale. He has established that. This is the mood of the pure devotees. This is why in our Sampradaya you see the acharyas are sometimes called Rupanugas. What is the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He wants to see this mercy distributed. And someone who is understood that this is the dear desire of the Lord and is trying to distribute that mercy to satisfy the Lord, to establish his heart desire. He is a follower of Rupa Goswami or Rupa Anuga. So that is, you see, the most exalted thing. To know what is the Lord's desire, his special desire, and to try to satisfy that. That is the epitome, the apex of spiritual perfection. Everyone is trying to satisfy themselves, but they mistake their self to be this body. And so instead they simply satisfy their senses, or try to satisfy their senses, but fail miserably. But go to no end, to the very limit in trying to do so, and always create havoc and competing with all the other similar sense gratifiers in the grand competition. But the devotee, He is saying, what is the self, the real self, the self of the self? Krishna's desire, and trying to establish that by preaching Krishna consciousness. So that is the nectar of devotion, oceans being expanded. So without those devotees, it's very hard for these fallen souls to get delivered on their own. Practically impossible. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's descent has caused their good fortune. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what did he say? I am one person, how many fruits can I give out? You all come, take this fruit of love of Krishna. Eat to your hearts, can they eat fully, and then distribute it. What does Srila Prabhupada say? Be happy in Krishna consciousness and make others happy. I remember when, of course now, it's a little better, but I remember just the year before this, 2 years ago, when I went to Guadalajara in Mexico, how Acharya Dev, who had been so rigorously preaching all over Latin America and all over the world, in India, how his health was so completely deteriorated. Of course, there we had some nice relief. There was a waterfall, 120 feet from hot, some kind of warm springs falling down. He would just bathe a little bit we would bathe together in this natural pond from the hot spring water. But his health was so deteriorated from preaching. But until his body practically gave out, he didn't think to stop. Of course, now he's become more careful. This is a quality, the devotees, they just go on preaching. As much as strength they have, they want to simply go on preaching. Srila Prabhupada untiringly, 11 or 17 times at the age of 70, 80 years old, going around the world again and again. When he'd come to India, we'd always say, of course, please stay here longer. He would stay for 1 or 2 months there. In Mayapur, in November, October, he would come, then again during the festival. I was very fortunate to get that association. But he'd say, no, if I don't travel, then how this movement will go on? I must constantly travel. He would say how he was cursed by the parents of the children of the devotees. Just like Narada Muni had been cursed by Daksha. Narada Muni took all of his sons and made them into devotees, into brahmacharis. He was cursed that you will never have a fixed house. I curse you to never have a fixed house. You have to always simply wander around. Can't stay any place more than a few days. So of course, that was a very big curse for Daksha. The materialist, their idea of curse, you know, just like we're reading this morning, that when the Narada Muni gave the story of Puranjana to King Bahishman, he said, I can't really understand exactly what you are saying because we are engaged in fruitive activities, we're karmi. Therefore, it's very difficult to understand what is the meaning of this story. And the purport Prabhupada explained that unless one performs devotional service, the actual meaning of Krishna consciousness, the mystery of devotional service, it can't be understood fully. They get confused. So like that, Daksha, he's thinking he's cursing Narada Muni. Narada Muni, this is the greatest blessing I ever had. I'm going to be eternally in traveling Sankirtan. I never have to settle down anywhere. You know, he took it as a blessing. So Prabhupada said that like that, I have the curse. So therefore, I can never stay anywhere more than a week or two. Actually, he was always traveling. Of course, in Vrindavan,
then myself and one or two other, some other devotees were there. And he told us, he was looking right at me, but I remember other people were there also, that, so now I cannot travel anymore. Now I'm just staying here in Vrindavana. Now you must take this curse. I think he said, you sannyasis, you have to take this curse and travel. So since then, I haven't even been able to, except for the festival, I don't stay anywhere more than, in fact, 2 weeks also. So, in any case, for a devotee, there's no curse. So even this curse that Prahlad Maharaj, I'm going to finish you off, Hiranyakashipu said, there's no question of curse. Only thing the devotee is worried about is that I may not become attracted to the material nature and somehow I may not forget, rather, the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the only thing the devotee is afraid of. Afraid of being attracted to this material. That fear is purifying. Never afraid of the Lord. Hiranyakashipu was so afraid of Narsinghadev. All the demigods are afraid of Narsinghadev. But Prahlad, he wasn't afraid of Narsinghadev. You know, this is my protector. This is my Lord. So the devotee, he's afraid of forgetting Krishna. Afraid of Maya. Not proud, humble against Maya. But afraid of Maya. Not afraid of Krishna. Always clings to Krishna's lotus feet. Just like a baby, not afraid of his mother. Baby is always holding on to the mother for protection, but afraid of strangers, afraid of... So this material world is a strange environment to us. It's not natural. So therefore we should cling on the lotus feet of Guru Gauranga Nithai Gaur. And the easiest way to cling is to manifest their desire in this world, to try to establish their desire, that is to give everyone Krishna consciousness in a very humble, determined and enthusiastic way. Spreading all around the glories of the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Jai Sisi Nitai Gaur, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Sri Acharya Dev. Are there any questions? Of course, that's also said to be a sign of advancement when one sees one's own heart to be hard. Usually, someone that enters into devotional service, makes a little progress, immediately thinks that I'm very advanced. But then as one advances further, and gets a greater perspective on exactly how exalted is devotional service, and one sees oneself as being very insignificant. Even Srimati Radharani, she saw herself as being not at all a devotee. So if we start to see ourselves as not being a devotee, that can be also a not being a really advanced devotee, that can also be a type of sign of advancement. The thing is that this should not discourage us, but this should enhance our desire to melt our heart, to be a devotee. It's not unusual that we are hard-hearted. In fact, if we are conscious of that, that is a good step in the right direction. Now we should begin to melt our heart. I explained how when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, within a few days, Jagannath's Snan Yatra will be happening. And when that Snan Yatra happened, Lord Chaitanya became mad in separation for Jagannath, and his whole body became practically on fire, and he ran the 11 miles to the Alanath temple, and he fell down in front of Alanath, the Lord, Vishnumurti there in Orissa, and he fell down, and he paid his obeisance, and he fell just completely unconscious right in front of the deity in separation. And his body was so intense in love for Krishna that actually he melted right into the rock. The rock melted.
that stone, the impression of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, body, full 7 feet, melted into the rock, is still there in Alanath, the temple of Alanath near Jagannath Puri. They offered us to worship that stone if we want to. They offered us the right. One temple who's doing the puja of that stone now. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his love is so intense for Krishna that by associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by chanting his name, by hearing his and remembering his pastimes and visiting his holy Dham and always feeling separation from the Dham when one is not able to stay there, that can melt even a stone-like heart. We should avoid, of course, offending Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. And we should stay in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by his contact, that can easily melt even the hardest heart. So, it is generally those devotees who think that their heart is not hard, or that they're already advanced, or they're not feeling themselves in a great need for a lot of mercy, they are in a more unfortunate situation than a devotee who is very eager for mercy, who is feeling himself to be very in need of Lord Chaitanya's mercy and who is always anxious to get it. The thing is that the secret word in that mantra is the eager to get the mercy. And that we should take every realization of our own inadequacies to increase our desire. To intensify our hankering for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. But it's not demon and devotee, it's demon and demigod. Demon and demigod. Devata and Asura. Sura, Asura. The demigods, they are trying to enjoy their senses, but they are trying to do so following the orders of Krishna. And the demons, they're trying to enjoy their senses, but they're doing so in defiance of Krishna. But the devotees, they're not trying to enjoy their senses. They've understood that sense enjoyment is not the goal of life. They're trying to satisfy Krishna's senses. So the devotees, they're different from demons and from the demigods. See, the demons and the demigods, they're always fighting with each other. But Krishna and Balaram, they're standing off on one side watching. They're actually in no side. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he defeated all the demigods. But Krishna is not really concerned unless the demigods make some special appeal. But only because Hiranyakashipu started to torture Prahlad, who was his devotee, then of course the Lord will protect his devotee. But Prahlad, when his father was killed by, what did he say? He said, "Lord Narsingadev, please have mercy on my father. Do not take any offense." In other words, the devotee, he doesn't see the demons as enemies. Because there's no competition. The devotee is simply in love with Krishna. He wants to see the good fortune for everyone. The devotee is transcendental to demons and demigods. Just like the Americans, they think they're the demigods and that the Russians are the demons, and vice versa. You see, of course, theoretically, one can see those who are more God-fearing, they're actually demigods. And those who are more atheistic, they're demons. But actually, neither of them are perfect. Neither of them are sinful. One is is better materially than the other. But the devotee is transcendental.
That whether a person is a demon or a demigod, the devotee wants to see them all become devotees. Just like Bali Maharaj, he was the king of the demons, but he became a great devotee. That Krishna has devotees who are both demons and demigods. That even a demon, one who is addicted to sense gratification, who is of envious nature, that by mercy of devotee, he may also become a devotee. So the devotee wants to even see the demons, you see, transform. Of course, the devotees sometimes get in the mood thinking that they're demigods and then fighting against the demons, you see. But actually, the demigods, you see, if they find the demons are down, just like when they saw Hiranyakashipu was down, they immediately wanted to go and kill Prahlad. Because they thought Prahlad, this pregnant mother of Hiranyakashipu, that he was also another demon. So in that way, there's always this type of a political conquest between the demigods and the demons. But the devotees, they don't mind to see demons who try to stop Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement punished or harassed so that the movement can go on unimpeded. At the same time, if those people themselves become devotees, they're perfectly, that's what they prefer that much better. That means that a devotee, he's not an envious person. He's always wishing the welfare of everyone. But of course, if someone is stopping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, then it's better for that person if somehow or another his offensive activities are ended. Because the more offenses he's committing, it's the more unfortunate. Just like a snake is so offensive. So even the saintly people like to see when a snake is killed. Yena tena prakarena mana krishna nivoshate. By any means, whatever it takes to get a person to accept Krishna, become attracted to Krishna, that's what Rupa Goswami recommends. After a person is attracted, first get a person attracted to Krishna. First get him to understand, to be attracted to Krishna, to get a taste for Krishna, and then to understand that he's a servant of Krishna. When he understands, by getting a taste of Krishna consciousness, automatically one will understand that I'm a servant of Krishna. And one understands he's a servant of Krishna, then you introduce rules and regulations and so many different types of restrictions that will help that person to further advance. Before a person has accepted Krishna or understood that he's a servant of Krishna, if you simply push on rules and regulations or restrictions with that person, then he will commit some offense, so he will not be able to accept. The first thing is by any means, yena tena, whatever works for that particular individual, get him attracted to. I mean, I can remember in India, Prabhupada said some very amazing things that we could say to the Indian devotees to attract them to Krishna consciousness. And practically, you say we could say very materialistic things just to get people attracted. I don't know if I should say it. No. Can't imagine this. It says that one should not see the deity too close or see the spiritual master too close. So, I know sometimes even servants of Srila Prabhupada would approach the Prabhupada that in my mind I'm becoming familiar. And then Srila Prabhupada would say, oh, yes, that you must see. The disciple becomes familiar with the spiritual master, that is very detrimental. So then you would say, immediately if they said that, on one or two occasions, he changed his service and sent them away. That if one sees himself becoming familiar, then has to take whatever means he can to... That's why it's difficult when one has to associate a lot with the spiritual master. Sometimes devotees complain that, well, I never get to see my spiritual master, or I don't get that much association. On the other hand, those devotees who are always associating with, sometimes, you know, you see that that abundance of mercy is too much for them. Because the spiritual master is always refining the devotees. And usually devotees, they don't have that much tolerance to be refined that intensively, day after day, month after month. That can only come with maturity. One has to know who he is in devotional platform and train the mind to act accordingly. The mind is just like a little child. The mind, you can make the mind do this or that. So with intelligence, one has to direct the mind. Just like the mind, if it starts thinking of sense gratification, you redirect it back to Krishna. If the mind starts to think of the spiritual master, of senior Vaishnavas, of the deity in some familiar or materialistic way, then you have to control the mind. No, don't think in that way. Even if some senior Vaishnava, he's very familiar with me, that's his mercy. But actually, I should have this mentality. If you let the mind take its own course, it will always take the wrong course because it's a materialistic mind. So by intelligence, we have to direct the mind. That's why it says that a mind which is controlled is one's best friend, and an uncontrolled mind is the worst enemy. So as soon as we let the mind control, let it go its own way, then we'll be in trouble. And as long as we keep it always with intelligence, according to Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru, never depend on the mind. Mind will always let one down. But depend on the intelligence, analyzing what is the mind doing. If one is careless and not watching what the mind is doing, just accepting whatever the mind is coming up with, sure, then we'll be in trouble. So one has to be mature, always, that's a dhira. Sober, controlling the mind with the intelligence. Just like I remember one sannyasi's wife, of course he wasn't a sannyasi then, he was asking her, you know, just to wash his clothes. And then she didn't like to do that. She thought that, you know, there were other things that she should do. They thought that, well, of course they were doing a lot of preaching, and that at least the one thing, at least that the wife would wash the clothes would be something. Because I got all the problems, and I don't even have to wash my own clothes on top of it. It might as well just be a sannyasi. They approached Prabhupada and took sannyas. All just over a little thing like that, you know. So it says that woman, if she sees the husband as representing Krishna, if the disciple sees the spiritual master as representing Krishna, if the citizen sees the king as representing Krishna, in that way then one is always Krishna conscious. Even, of course, the husband is not Krishna and may have so many defects, but the wife sees, well, if I follow the instruction of the husband, which is a very austere thing to do sometimes, unless it's a completely, you know, crazy suggestion against the principles or something, then by doing so, this is my lot, this is Krishna taking it that this is Krishna's desire, so then that she's Krishna conscious. Similarly, the disciple accepts what the spiritual master says as Krishna's desire. He's Krishna conscious. But as soon as we start to make our own conceptions about what we should do and what we shouldn't do, then we're responsible. And we make a mistake, then we're finished. Even Ramanuja Acharya, he was completely detached from his family life. But he couldn't leave his wife because she was faithfully serving him. But he told her that if you make two mistakes in devotional service, then I'll leave. And I forget what one of them was, but I know that he told her, gave a very explicit order what to do in serving the deity. And somehow she just, you know, with kind of woman simplicity, she didn't do it. She did, you know, something else which appeared to be materially more suitable. And as a result, the deity service was improperly done, and there was some offense committed. That, and there was one other thing, about, I think, receiving another Vaishnava or something like that. And these two mistakes, and he just left, took something else. But as long as she was serving properly, then she was responsible, not he was responsible. Even though he didn't particularly need to be in a family situation because she was helping, she wasn't a family, he felt obligated to continue engaging her in service and to supporting her in different ways. But as soon as she started to take the responsibility on herself to be more intelligent than he was, even maybe she thought she was right, well, she lost Ramanuja Acharya. So in the same way, if a disciple starts to think, or even a junior or less advanced devotee starts to think oneself to be more intelligent, then he becomes responsible. So, of course, if a disciple becomes independent of the guru, that means he's got no shelter at all. Vaishnavas may have different of opinion, so still it's risky for the junior Vaishnavas, because whether their interpretation of what is pleasing to Prabhupada is more accurate, or what an older godbrother's interpretation is more accurate, but of their spiritual master, Prabhupada, whoever it may be, the idea is that, of course, they're not without shelter, but it's a question of responsibility to understand what is the desire of the spiritual master. So therefore, it's always the safe recourse, sadhu, shastra, guru. So whatever the guru and the shastra says, that of course is absolute. And the sadhus, or the senior Vaishnavas, they are giving the interpretations or the understanding of what is, how to practically apply and what is the meaning of the verdict of the guru and the shastra. So whenever one does some major decision, it's always beneficial to discuss with the sadhus. If the spiritual master is present, then of course, whatever he says, that is as good as Krishna said. So in this way, if one acts so that all the time he is not responsible, but all the time you can directly see how I'm just doing what the Shastra says, what the Guru is saying, or what the Sadhus are saying, then he's always safe. There's no risk. Of course, sometimes one has to take a risk to preach. But if there is a way to take no risk, that's the best way. Especially, I mean, personally, Krishna consciousness, no risk. We take materially risk to preach. But in what we should do, if we don't want to take a risk to do something which we do not know if it's authorized by Krishna, that risk we don't take. But if we know it's authorized by Krishna, we're willing to take any other kind of risk. To take a risk which is
We don't know if it's authorized by Krishna perfectly. We're not perfectly sure. We're just doing it on some type of impetuousness or strength. We have not really discussed it with other Vaishnavas or cleared it with the spiritual master or do not have the direct scriptural understanding to back us up. But we're doing it anyway. That's whimsical. That's the meaning of whimsical activity. Activity which is not authorized. So if we don't know if it's authorized, that's also whimsical. We should know, factually, what I'm doing is correct. This is necessary for preaching, and this is confirmed by Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. So if we're always doing things in that way, then how we can offend, or how we can be in trouble, then we don't have to worry about. In this way, we can respect the other Vaishnavas, and we can respect the spiritual master, knowing that independent of their shelter, we're in a precarious situation. Does that answer the question? Is there any limit to questions? No, I mean, I've had darshans that have gone up till 2 in the morning. I mean, that's... But then the next day, it's rough on the sankirtan. I don't know, you know. So. By not being whimsical. By not being whimsical. Purity is the force. Books are the basis. We have to always keep in line with. That's what the meaning of Guru Parampara is. As soon as someone does something which is not directly authorized by the Guru Parampara, and not just that even my own opinion is taken, but even other senior Vaishnavas also agree with my understanding of the previous Acharya's desires in this regard, and that is all authorized by the Shastra, then in this way one stays within that flow. But what happens is they start to speculate, or they start to do things which they may feel this is a good thing to do, but it's not directly authorized by the scriptures or by the line of teachers. So they don't have a strict line of teachers. And the scriptures are not also so, exhaustive in answering a lot of questions. So what happens is as the world became more and more complicated, and they became speculating more and more on what should be the thing to do, where because the scriptures don't have, there's no line of disciplic succession, so there's no teachers that know really how to interpret those scriptures. So then you get hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of sects and subsects and different opinions, and you end up playing bingo in the basement of the church. The double jackpot. And that's why we have to follow strictly the system of Guru Parampara. Follow the instructions of previous acharyas. Prabhupada says not only that you have a guru, but you also have a previous acharyas. It's like Prabhupada, he not only tried to follow the instructions of Bhakti Siddhanta, but also Gaura Kishore, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, of Jagannath Das Babaji. Of course, principally one has to follow his own spiritual master's instructions. But beyond that, one is conscious of what the mood of the previous acharyas is and what their overall desire is. Just like if you want to draw a line, you see, so you need, if you have 2 points of reference, it's easy to draw the straight line. If you just one, it tends, you know, ever do that? When you make a notebook, you want to make lines this way, you just make one
2 inches, 1 inch across, and then you want to draw the straight line just by vision. You know, then you get in the bottom of the page, and some of them are a little bit this way and that way. So you do one measurement in the top and one in the bottom. And then you draw, and it's just, they're all exactly in line. So it's not that our own spiritual master is the universe unto himself, but it's coming in a line, and we can see the overall line. And that is according to time and circumstance, of course, he's applying that. And then as the times change, we see the overall line, so it doesn't just go completely, just it slightly goes. Prabhupada, he kept the basic mood of the previous acharyas. But each one, they may slightly have different types of preaching prominent during those times, depending on the different stages of the preaching. So we'll see that as Krishna consciousness becomes more and more widespread over the world, that there'll be new type of devotees and new types of mayas which will come up, which have to be dealt with different type of preaching programs. Just like the problem of planting the seed, and when the seed sprouts, and then you have the problem of watering it and manuring it and weeding it. So the problems in growing always change according to the stage, and finally there's the harvest. So ultimately Lord Chaitanya said, in every town and village throughout the whole world his name will be spread. You see, so although there's a good progress made, there's still far to go. So as the movement becomes more and more established, then there'll be, just like Prabhupada said, I have so many plans for spreading Krishna consciousness. I cannot reveal them all to you right now. So Prabhupada will be revealing through his mercy more and more plans for spreading Krishna consciousness. Building off the basic plans we have now.